Some questions, Prabhu? Yeah.
We have a guest. If I'm not mistaken, his name is Monsieur Pierre. He has a question.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to know if, as human beings, we are able to get rid of doubt and live in certainty.
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna sometimes addresses Arjuna by different names, Dhananjay, Prita, son of Prita, different ways, Gudakesh, or is that Krishna? Paranta. And Krishna is addressed by many names. Thematically, when he speaks, it says Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, which means that God is speaking, would be the shorthand of that. Why Bhagavan? It doesn't say Sri Krishna Uvacha, but Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, to make it clear what Krishna's position is. But Krishna is known by many different names. You hear, we sing songs that are composed exclusively of names of Krishna, arranged in poetic way. We sing entire songs that are just names of Krishna, one after another. Yasumati Nandana, Brajavaranagara, Gokula Ranjana, Gopi Paranadana. Krishna is known as Govinda. But one of the names Arjuna addresses Krishna by in the Bhagavad Gita is Madhusudan. And Madhu was a demon, and Madhusudan means who killed this particular demon. But Arjuna is using it in a metaphoric sense in this way, and he's saying, as begins with a D. Dispensed, but means like killed. Yeah.
Dispatched.
Huh? Dispatched, that's the word. As you dispatched, the demon Madhu, I want you to kill the demon of doubt that's in my mind. That's my problem, is these doubts that are plaguing me. So, it is possible, but it requires, this has to be expressed delicately, but the transfer of autonomy, because as long as we are defending a finite perspective, no matter how extensive it might be, banded together with many other finites, democracy in action, the sum total of the finite is never equal to the infinite. Even the best finite minds are still finite. So as long as we're defending that position, there must be accompanying doubt, actually. It's an interesting thing. You could say another way to express that would be agnosticism, which is sometimes held by certain, even atheists, you could say, as being the most legitimate position, at least the most defensible. As Bertrand Russell, the great British thinker, he wouldn't describe himself as an atheist because he knew that was as indefensible as saying you're a theist. You can't prove either position. So he liked to position himself as an agnostic. But it was a strategic move. Really, you could say he favored the atheistic position, but he positioned himself as an agnostic strategically in argument. So whatever argument you make an argument in favor of God, and you say, that sounds really good, but I don't know. You make an argument against the existence of God, sounds like a good argument, I can't say for sure. So I take the position of a doubter, right? As a defense, actually. Whereas you or us, by extension, we're trying to eliminate that. He's saying, no, it's a really good position to be in, actually. Again, within a particular context. So then two equally revered atheists of the 20th, 21st century. One of them, and self-described atheist, you know, one of them would say to his brother that, he'd say, but really, don't we have to admit that considering the infinite possibility of things, we'd have to allow for the possibility of God. You don't believe it, I don't believe it, but just being rational people and putting in, you know, the X factor, in this case, the factor of infinity, we'd have to allow for it, wouldn't we? And his friend would say, no, we can't do that. Because he knew that once you open that possibility, then it's that very thing. It's possible, and it means that all this other type of thinking could be wrong, right? As I've mentioned, when flying from China to New York, and on the airplane, next to me was a Chinese national, but who teaches at one of the major universities in America, teaches advanced computer science. So I thought this was a good opportunity, different theories I have, or a theory I have, to run it by him and see how he would respond to it. So he was agreeable. And I said, can you say with absolute certainty that the original source of all aroma has no olfactory capacity? Can't smell that very thing it's the source of. Yeah. And I mean, we're just on an airplane. We don't have reporters with mics in our face. We're not in a classroom. And he answered, he said, the way you have framed the question, can I deny that with absolute certainty? No, I can't. I may not believe it, but I can't deny it with absolute certainty. And I said, then I was going to ask a series of questions. Then I said, then I don't need to ask you another question, because I can reframe the same question for each sense. Source of all visual phenomena, can't see. Source of all auditory, you know, sound, cannot hear, cannot taste, cannot feel, cannot think, has no intelligence. And you're admitting the possibility of that. And our contention is acknowledging that possibility allows for the basis of theistic culture. When Srila Guru Maharaj, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, was traveling and preaching, he was giving a talk somewhere. someone from the a man challenged him once. He said, if the infinite can be known by the finite, it's not infinite. And we could say, actually, that makes a lot of sense. The finite, by finite means, cannot realize the infinite. It would just be a larger amount of finite than anyone has conceived previously, but falling short of the infinite. Why in mathematics, I remember in school, I didn't pay attention often, but every now and then they caught my attention. was this thing where they showed, like, you wrote some numbers and then put a little line and said, it goes on ad infinitum. So we're representing it with a symbol. There was a TV show that I was allowed to watch the beginning, and then I had to go to sleep. They let me, like, watch, because the first 60 seconds, this Dr. Zorba, he would come on with chalk on a blackboard, and he'd write these symbols. He'd write a circle, like, man. Then he'd draw another circle with a plus, woman. Then another, birth. Then the cross, death. And then the last thing he'd write, infinity. He'd do that, infinity. And I was like, okay, now you have to go to bed, you know. But I kind of go, infinity. And I thought, oh, that's like the coolest one. Man, woman, birth, death, infinity. Oh, what about infinite man, infinite woman, infinite man? You know, it just made you think about a lot of different things. So the man said, if the infinite can be known by the finite, it's not infinite. Rupa Goswami says, Atak Sri Krishna Namadi, Nabhavyed Graham Indre, Sevan Mukhehe Javaro Shriyameva Spurtida. Sri Krishna Nam Adi means Nama Rupa Guna Leela, saying the name or sound, name Krishna, form, qualities, pastimes, they're beyond the grasp of the mind and intellect, of the senses. Senses including, we sometimes say, mind as sixth sense, and by extension, intellect, the discriminating factor. It's beyond their grasp. The infinite is beyond the grasp of the finite. So that man is saying, if the infinite, finite can know the infinite, that's not infinite. But Guru Maharaj's answer was, he said, if the infinite cannot make itself known to the finite, it's not infinite. And therein lies our prospect and the basis of all theistic culture, belief in the prospect, the possibility that the infinite can make itself known to the finite through infinite means. Infinite means should be at the disposal of the infinite. So this comes back to the central point. Arjun, he first gives his assessment on the Battle of Kurukshetra. Krishna is Arjun's charioteer. It's an interesting reversal. You would think, I mean, because at least theoretically to understand this, we have to accept Krishna's divinity. So you would think, you want him with his omnipotence fighting your war. But on account of an allusion to his omnipotence, Krishna cannot fight in this war, but he can drive the chariot and give advice. That seems more fair. That would, you know, be an unfair advantage if you have the infinite omnipotent Lord, you know, as one of your soldiers. So Krishna is the charioteer, and Arjuna, Senayor Ubayor Madhye, Stapayi, Achyuta, there he calls him in here. Place my chariot between the two armies. But there, so what is happening is Arjuna, he gives his assessment of what he sees before him. And we can say that means the world, his life, karmic circumstance, everybody involved in that, everything. He's saying what he can make of it. And that's put him, it's filled him with doubt and anxiety. He's an intelligent person. It's not that he's just bewildered because he's not properly informed, he doesn't have the right, you know, data sets or information available to him, and therefore in his ignorance he's, no. He's highly skilled, extremely intelligent, and yet finds himself surrounded by an inescapable karmic circumstance that, well, seems that very thing, inescapable, where, and all the things that his life thought were meaningful or important have come into question. Even such things, it says, I mean, this is in the Bhagavad Gita. Because everyone thinks it's like the simplest book. We're told many often like that, but some of the things said there are very heavy and profound. Guru Nahatva Himahanubhavan. Guru Hatva. Guru killing. He's saying, how can we kill Krishna? How can we kill our gurus, our teachers, those who taught us martial arts? They're to be revered. It wasn't just a question of being trained by them, but our reverence for them was the instruction was contingent upon revering them properly. And now we're going to take up arms against them. How can that be good? And many other things are discussed there. But still, for the sake of this discussion, I would call it a finite perspective. From an individual perspective, right? Which we call pratyaksha. Right? Means, interestingly, yeah, what you can see, your perspective. It means literally what you can see, but figuratively, metaphorically. And that leads one to ask another, to inquire from someone else, which is called paroksha. Paraksha, the eyes of others, or the perspective of others. Just that there are those who believe that through imaginative literature, you expand your awareness and subsequently empathy for others. It makes your vision broader by hearing from many other sources, particularly writers, thinkers, etc. And of course, there's some merit to that. And then now we have the information age, Google, and other such search engines, the idea that, you know, the sum total of human experience, not just like data or what we know, but now when we see with so much visual media, the sum total of human experience, in some cases literally, 24 hours, a day, valuable or otherwise, misleading or leading, leading or misleading, the sum total of human experience is available to everyone at all times for free. Right? With ads, because somebody's got to pay for all this free information. But anyway, so then we think, well, that's great. Let me type in the big questions on the big search engine. You know, like, I mean, look, in one sense, Arjuna has a distinct advantage because he can just turn to Krishna, who's omniscient. I mean, he's omniscient when he's sleeping, when he's not doing anything. He can generate unlimited omniscience. So when you have that person guiding you, that's really good. Not much we can say. So paraksha, we think, all right, hey, my perspective on this is limited. So it's very simple on some things. Someone's sitting in another room like, did you see that? You know. And we hear from them, oh, it's this. Oh, it looked like, from where I'm sitting, it looked like this. Oh, where I'm sitting, it's actually something else. Thank you. That's paroksha. But put everybody together, it sounds like a good idea, or an idea whose time has come, that pool everybody's eyes, right? What is it going in the direction of? An infinity of eyes. But we'll get to that later. It's still a finite number of eyes. So sum total of the finite is never equal to the infinite. So, but then, and part of paroksha means those who've lived before us, and they've dealt with the same questions, the same doubts, the same anxieties as you and I. What we call inherited wisdom. So we say, well, here's what these ancient thinkers said about this. You might find it relevant to your situation. So paroksha includes not just those who are alive, but those who've lived before us and dealt with the same things. But then there's another class, it's called aparoksha, which is interesting. The means not. So some will say, actually, all these mental impressions are sanskar that you've accumulated life after life after life after life. They're clouding the situation. You have acquired prejudice, acquired tendencies that are not helpful in realizing and actualizing your position and your actual identity. Tabula rasa, clean the slate, and then you'll be in a position, the best position for interpretation. So that pratyaksha, paroksha, aparoksha, clean slate, or what some call samadhi, this deep dreamlike state beyond experience. I'm saying it's experience that's misleading, right? All experience, subtle or gross, it's all sending you in the wrong direction. But then a fourth level is there from the Vaishnavas called adhoksaja. And notice up to this point, each one of these words had aksha, and a Sanskrit word for eyes. Pratyaksha, aparoksha, paroksha, aparoksha, now adhoksaja. And here it's saying, and this is where we come to the infinite making itself known to the finite, saying this sort of knowledge is descending. It's not empirical acquisition oriented. The more I acquire, the more I ascend. Here, it's descending knowledge coming from the adhoksaja realm, descending into this plane. And what is the method? It's descent, but we're told here that it will suppress sense experience, almost like those who favor aparoksha, the suspension of. They're saying, when this plane of knowledge descends, comes down to you, it will suppress your mundane experience, mundane seeing, mundane hearing, etc., which Rupa Goswami says in verse, are not possible to approach that. Saying, no, this will descend itself, suppress your mundane experience. That means there'll be no sensual experience, no. But rather, transcendental vision, hearing, tasting, touching, smelling, feeling. A total sensual experience, but categorically different than the finite. So this, the infinite making itself known to the finite. So there's one other stage after that, called aprakrita, which is a reference to Krishna, the human-like pastimes of a Krishna. Prakrita means mundane. That's the normal meaning of the word. So it's interesting. So many words could be used to indicate something that is divine or transcendental. Dibya, like dibya drishti, divine seeing, divine eyes. Divine. But here, the word selection is precise and says aprakrita, which means to tell us like it appears to be mundane, human-like, with all the apparent limitations of humanness, but it's the highest realm in the spiritual world, right? Human-like pastimes and human-like dimensions. Therefore, Krishna can be the charioteer of Arjuna. The central conception of the infinite can be guiding his chariot, and they can engage in a conversation. But what we see there is, in a sense, the transfer of autonomy to achieve autonomy. Arjun, after he gives his assessment of the world and admits he's plagued by doubt as what to do, which way to proceed, he turns to Krishna, and not just to get another opinion, but he says, Sishyastheham sarimam tvam prapanam. Sishya means disciple, and prapana means surrender. He says, now I am surrendering myself to you. You tell me, give me the infinite perspective. Remove these doubts I've had due to my limited, finite way of seeing things. That whether they're egocentric, that's a problem, egocentrism, right? Seeing everything spinning around yourself, this is going to be problematic, right? Not a blade of grass moves without the will of God. And we notice, like many, I noticed the other day, many blades of grass moving, and I didn't say they could. They were, I didn't sign off on that, right? So going from finite perspective to infinite perspective, that, and Arjun sees the wisdom in that, you could say. So now Krishna, he's going to advise him with this infinite perspective. But interestingly enough, he begins with a variety of possible relative options. It's interesting enough. He's saying, well, if you consider from this point of view, you could do this, consider it that way, you do that, and your nature, let's factor in your nature, all the same. We got to put that in. And it's a very rational, comprehensive, rational approach to the dilemma he's in, which is almost humorous, in a sense, if you consider who's speaking. It's as if he delights in showing that he's familiar with all, and there's another, you could say, underlying meaning. All the different proposals that one could make, he's going over them to show you. It's not that what I'm ultimately going to say is ignorant to the fact of these other options. No. Here are all the other possible options, and the reason you might be compelled to exercise them. But in the end, very beautifully, Krishna says, after all these things are discussed, he says, sarva-dharmam paricchajamam ekam sharanam braja. It's a very bold statement. He says, give up everything, including religion, religious ideas, and just surrender to me, and do this because I want you to. You know, what? But then you have to remember, what does it say? Sri Bhagavan, or who's talking? So he's saying, if in fact, sometimes our Guru Maharaj, Srila Sridhar Maharaj would say, Krishna, shamelessly, he's pleading with Arjun, I'm everything, I'm the infinite. He said, shamelessly, he's pleading his case with him. But that's the fact. If he is, in fact, who he's attributed to be, then that's all you need to know. And all these other options based upon a rational approach to problem solving become irrelevant, including religion. Because the word he uses is dharma, sarva dharma, all different types of dharma. Well, that means, you know, religious point of view, obligation, social, moral, everything it could possibly mean, give it up. Because what that means is you're calculating. It's back to a finite calculation. You're thinking, yeah, if I do this, then I get this as a result. So you're back to that calculative plane where once again it's you and a misconceived version of yourself, not the best version of yourself, which is Atma, right? It's this layer, this self that's buried under acquired tendencies and acquired prejudices that I've misconceived as being me. And on the basis of a misconceived identity, I'm going to make all sorts of choices. And even if I do them with, you know, like humanistic confidence, it's still an erroneous choice. So the way to become free from doubt is to go from the finite perspective to the infinite perspective, which descends to these four agents, sadhu, shastra, guru, and Vaishnav. Sadhu means the saints, shastra means revealed truth, not just holy books, but to understand, as Srila Sridhar said, they are passively posing as books. It's spiritually conscious substance, not from a long time ago. Or that's a relative perspective within the realm of time and space. He's saying it's spiritually conscious substance. It's alive. It's eternal. Oh, we're in this realm of time and space where we go, well, wasn't that spoken? They always say, 5,000 years ago. Or the cool people would say 50 centuries ago. Because they think we're so tired of saying 5,000 years ago, we're going to change it to 50 centuries. I like that. It has a poetic ring to it. And not that it's untrue from within this realm, but as we were talking the other day, Guru Maharaj saying, what is this world? A point on a line on a plane on a solid. What is the line? An infinite number of points. Infinite numbers of creations coming and going. This is Vedic perspective. And as we've told, Veda means those books that are given with the creation, from Brahma, the creator. Remember, he's a localized creator. Even that concept is there. He's a secondary creator. It's a creator within the mundane world. So Brahma, from Brahma at that time comes Veda. The Vedas are manifest, and varieties of accounts of how that happens. But then you have these books called the Puranas, which, now I should have said at the onset, Vedas, and Rig Veda in particular, it's considered the oldest religious book there is. So the Vedas predate any other type of scripture. So after some time, the so-called Puranas come. And Purana, in this context, can mean two things. One is what fulfills, or in the sense of supplements. Something may have been said in a condensed way, and the Puranas, speak about it in a broad way. As we're told, Vedas say, Adbhutakram, the statement, referring to the infinite, the Supreme Lord, he of wonderful stride, of wonderful steps. But just that, that's one of his names. He of wonderful movement, steps. What do the Puranas tell us? The story of Vamandev, the dwarf avatar, who takes the three worlds from Bali Maharaj in three steps, three dwarf steps. But he expands himself. So it Purana, in the sense, if it supplements, it fulfills what was given in Veda in a sutric style, fashion. But another meaning of Purana is old or oldest. And now it gets interesting. The Puranas, the Vedas are the oldest books, but the Puranas hold the name old within their title. Because although the Vedas were the first books in this creation, the Puranas have information, stories, and tales from previous creations. So in that sense, even though in a linear chronological sense, in the realm of time and space, they appear after them, they actually are full of substance from past creations, about past avatars and incarnations. So when you say a point, a line is an infinite number of points, and the point, creations coming and going, such things are there in the infinite. When we talk about revealed truth, we mean it's transcending time and space. That's why for those seeking to deal with the inevitable problem of mortality, or how to become liberated from the constraints of time and space, this is going to be very valuable for them. If it's at all possible, if someone said, well, I don't think that's possible, that's another thing. That's why we have to go, these are building blocks, back to, can the infinite make itself known to the finite? Back to, you know, can the source of all aroma have olfactory capacity? Inevitably, our starting point is the personality of Godhead. Not only the infinite, but that the infinite has personality as we do. And that's the aprakrita conception of Krishna. And what is the ultimate blind, mind-blowing spiritual consideration is that God is a person and not like on the Sistine Chapel ceiling. Adyam Puranam, I mean, I just offended, what, how many billion people? 1 point something billion. I went to Catholic school, I was trained by the nuns. No, I just mean to say, Brahma Sanya says, Adyam Purana, there's that word again, Purana. Adyam Puranam Purusham Navayam Cha. Saying, although God would then, if he was a person, he'd have to be the oldest person, but he doesn't have a big long beard. Adyam Puranam Purusham, he's the oldest original person, Navayovanam Cha, but appearing ever youthful and beautiful, actually increasingly beautiful and youthful at every moment, if that's possible. And apparently in Krishna conception, it's not only possible, but factual. So that the infinite making itself known to the finite through sadhu, the saints, shastra, the revealed truth, sadhu, shastra, guru, Krishna's agent, his other self, the absolute descending and relative circumstance. That possibility should pick the imagination. The absolute descending, and not only as a general principle, but in your relative circumstance. Because that's, after all, what is most compelling to us is our situation. And Vaishnav means, again, the saints, but of a particular quality. Those who understand that in Krishna conception, the devotee occupies the superior position. And that's the whole beauty of Krishna consciousness. The infinite, because it's all these terms, infinite, finite, we're so tiny and the infinite so great. And once one of Sridhar's relatives, seeing that he was by nature detached from the world and not likely to embrace family life, and he's the eldest son, and they thought, he's a little too much into God. You know, maybe I can say something to kind of, what's the word? Tamper, or are they the same thing? Tamp down, damper, dampen. I think you get the idea. Discourage him. So he said, you know, we know from science, you know, a trillion stars, some stars are so far away, their light may have not reached us yet. So if there is a God, we're so insignificant. If there's a God, do you think he has any time for people like us? We're so insignificant. But Guru Maharaj, already he's infused with revealed truth, what we're talking about, the living, live stream, revealed truth, descending from that plane to this plane through Vedic literature. So he's familiar with the Ishopanishad, where it says, tadajati, tadnayajati, tadure, tadantike, tadu sarvasyasya bhayataha. Tadure, tadantike, he told that relative, and he said, he's very far away. It says in the Upanishads, very far away. And it says, but tadantike, but he's within everything at the same time. Is there any place he is not? Like once years ago, and when the devotees were learning to, like encountering Bengali people and finding some of the unusual things they say. And so one of them was talking about the temple, and Prabhupada said this too as well. There's somebody who will say, why do we have to go to the temple? God is everywhere. And so Prabhupada would say, like, irate, so he's everywhere but the temple. Right? So it's one thing to say God's everywhere, right? But now, why go to the temple? Maybe he's there also, and maybe in a more, palatable, accessible, approachable way. God is everywhere. So Gurumar is telling him, tadure tarantike, in one sense very far, but nearest and dearest, Bhaktivinoda, vinod bole hai, haridas harinahi pai, he's saying, what is this situation I'm in? That person who should be nearest and dearest to me, and I to them, this means the personality of Godhead, nowhere to be found. Or in another verse that Gurudev liked to quote said, what's the problem? Separated by a mountain of ego. That's the problem. Bhayam dityaya vinibeshi tatsyad ishadape tasya viparya yoshmati. Forgetful of our relationship with Krishna, with the infinite, the omniscient, who can dispel every doubt. We've turned our backs on that and forgetfulness of that, and now we're in a place where you have to watch your back. Every step could be your last or lead you into some unfortunate situation. We don't have the range of perception to know whether something is a good long-term decision or it will just deliver short-term benefit. What in Veda is called Shreyas and Preyas. Preyas means what's immediately beneficial. Shreyas means what's ultimately beneficial. So Bhagavatam says, Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam shabde pare chanishnaktam brahmarupasamashrayam. Tasmad means therefore, like wrapping it up in summary. Tasmad gurum prapadye, therefore, you should get a guru. Get guru. Gurum prapadyeta jigyasu sreut. And what did you ask from guru? Not like, how can I pass the exam, the big exam that's coming up this weekend? Pray for me. You can do that too, but it's like, why? Unless you say, well, I only, follow the advice of the Vaishnava. I imagine there's a way you can ask that with utmost sincerity, that it leaves the realm of karmakanda. But generally speaking, that's not how we're told to make our approach. Jigyasu Sreya Uttamam. Jigyasu means inquire about Sreya Uttamam, what is ultimately, profoundly, life transformatively beneficial for me. Shabde, pare, and shabda, the spiritual sound, that truth that is descending in a current of spiritual sound, nishnatam, they have faith in that. What others are trying to get their head around and trying like see if they could possibly believe it, they're hardcore, they live this. Just like Brahmins, but why are Brahmins, which are in the Saguna plane, actually, appreciated so much? Because, and what's in their name? Brahma means spirit. What other people have difficulty conceiving, it's in their DNA as a starting point. Actual Brahmins. That's why the word is there, Brahma, spirit. Brahma and Parabrahma, they get it. They're not struggling with it. They may struggle in other ways about impersonal absolute, different ways, but this essential spiritual equation they understand. Shabde pare chanishnaktam brahman upasam, there it is. Who's brahman upasam ashrayam, totally situated in the nirguna plane. So they can give the right advice. After the Kurukshetra war, because millions died, and one could think like, this, it could have been averted. Why was it necessary? Why is Krishna encouraging Arjuna to fight in this war? Right? And so later, one Brahmin named Uttanka, he thought, and with so many widows, orphan children, everything, and he found Krishna and said, Krishna, you are the cause of all of this suffering. You could have prevented this. Like sometimes people will say, they'll mention something horrific. I don't want to mention a particular thing, but they'll mention something horrific that actually human beings have done to other human beings and say, why, how can God allow this? How can he not? If the basic premise is free will, how could he allow us to misuse our free will on such a horrific scale? Well, that's the world we live in. But at any rate, so this Uttanka, he finds Krishna, and with the power that he's accumulated by his austerities, his spiritual practices and position, he's going to expend that energy and he's going to curse Krishna. He said, Krishna, I curse you for all these widows, orphan children, all the suffering. I'm cursing you. He wants to take Krishna down by summoning his brahminical prowess. And Krishna tells him basically like, hold that thought and consider this. I'm in the nirguna plane. This world is like tama, raja, sattva. Qualified means mundane qualifications. Ignorance, passion, and goodness. Goodness being the best of the three, but still mundane nonetheless. So he's saying, you're in the nirguna world. As he tells Arjuna, what does he say? Trigunya vishaya veda nistrigunya bhavarjuna. Arjuna, go beyond the three gunas of this world. Anyway, so he's saying, so you, and I'm in the nirguna plane. I'm moving in apparently the saguna world, but actually I'm totally situated in the nirguna plane. So what's going to happen is you're going to summon and expend, summon your brahminical prowess, what you acquired, and spend that energy cursing me, and it will have no effect because I'm not in that plane. I'm in the nirguna plane, transcendental to that. So before you waste all of that, consider this. So, Brahman Upasam Ashrayam, those who, by extension, are thus situated, similarly situated, they can give us that soul-freeing, doubt-destroying advice. And only they can, because it will penetrate the coverings of acquired prejudice and acquired tendency and touch the soul. And the soul, touched by such instruction, begins to move toward the nirguna plane. But at the same time, what compels one to make the spiritual approach, we could call a healthy skepticism in oneself. And in this realm, self-doubt may be healthy may lead one to get superior advice and instruction. Srila Sridharmaya would say, don't be overly confident in your own estimation of things. That leads one to inquire from those who are superiorly experienced, who are reliable agents or interpreters of revealed truth in that way. So the finite, its legitimate position, back to our original thing about Russell and other, it's in an amusing way, it's a legitimate position for us to be plagued by doubt. Right? But that compels us to make the spiritual approach to remove the doubt, not to just confer with other doubters. But that reminds me of one story where when Srila Guru Maharaj had a migraine in Badrinath, and in another room, two men, they're having a, like discussion, argument, but in a gentlemanly way, about one asserting, you know, God exists, the soul exists, the other saying, no, I doubt God, I doubt the soul exists, you know, and they're going back and forth. And Guru Maharaj calls the man who's doubting into his room and asks him this question. He says, does the doubter exist? And of course, he has to say, yes. Saying, all right, then that person who's capable of doubt, that's your starting point. That is indirectly good news. So who's capable of doubt is capable of belief. Right? And really, this is the culture of faith. It's not basically, you know, and we're conducting a scientific experience as we speak to prove these things. Not that kind of thing. You can't prove what is subjective. And this is super subjective. You can't prove that someone is beautiful, right? You can't prove that a joke is funny when nobody laughs. Say, no, let me show you why this is actually funny. That's not going to help, right? They say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You can't prove that something tastes good because it's subjective. Here in Thailand, we're saying like, it would be really a relative position on what is spicy hot or not, right? If you ask a Thai person what is spicy hot, you'll get one sort of response. Ask someone from Russia what is spicy hot, you may get another side of the spectrum. So really, in a quite interesting way, the things that we appear to be hardwired to seek all lie in the subjective realm, which is not provable, and is sometimes irrational. Right? Like love. Love may rarely be rational. We could say it's mostly irrational. And we're supposed to be, you know, rational beings or rational animals. Then why do we do all of these, compelled to do all these irrational things? Because we're so hardwired to seek love, beauty, charm, sweetness, and perfection. The axiom is there, to err is human. Right? There's no one who said, oh, that's not actually true. Except now that I've said that, there's somebody on the internet who's like, I'm going to try and disprove that. But generally speaking, there's a consensus that to err is human. And Srila Guru Maharaj beautifully took this statement and said, to err is inevitable for all being not perfect. So we make mistakes, we misread people, situations, ourselves. Right? So he said, to err is inevitable for all being not perfect. And then he makes an interesting observation. He said, still, we seek perfection. There's this element in us that is perfection seeking. And that and the rational part of ourself knows that our position is less than perfect. And in all likelihood, we will never achieve perfection. Yet still, we try for that. We think, well, at least certain people think, that would be the best thing to try for. And if we don't reach that, you know, we set a high goal. But really, we want it to be perfect. I've mentioned this poet, Röttgé, who says, we need more people to specialize in the impossible. The implication being, there's enough people doing what's possible. Right? We don't need to add to that. What we need are more people to specialize in the impossible. Right? So yeah, the imperfect seeking perfection. Right? Factoring in that we're all imperfect and flawed in various ways, still we seek perfection. And then he makes the next point by saying, and if it were something you could just give to yourself, as human as generally, either state explicitly or otherwise, you'd have it by now if you could gift perfection to yourself. But the fact that we've not achieved it, although we're hardwired to seek it, implies that, and Guru Maharaj is thinking, it's the perfect that can gift perfection. It's the infinite that can make itself known. He said, by all my finite means, I can't verify the existence of God. Even well-intentioned theists have been trying to do this in various ways. I think it's a mistaken idea. Because that's, again, the finite is going to certify the infinite. Not a good program. But the infinite can make itself known to the finite. The perfect is capable of revealing perfection to the imperfect, for the imperfect transitioning toward perfection. That's a beautiful thing. And Guru Maharaj said, that is the, that allows for the entrance of guru or the guide who guides us in the transition from imperfection to perfection. But I would be remiss if I did not say at the same time that there's a type of sweet doubt that exists in the spiritual world. Everything has to have its, if this world is a perverted reflection of that realm, then it has to be there, but without any venom or sting. So like when Krishna says, I cannot estimate how much love Radharani has for me, although he's omniscient, which means technically that you know everything. He's saying, I cannot estimate how great her, I don't know, how great is it? But it's awakened the curiosity within me to experience that. And I think by experiencing that, I would have a better idea or feel for that very thing. So there has to be a sweet version of that. And Srimati Radharani herself, decrying her own position. I have this reputation as being, you know, not only a devotee, but the greatest devotee of Krishna. What a moniker to have. The greatest devotee of him. The better half of the sweet absolute. And he's saying, but my position is such, he said, my, you can say sadness or cause for disappointment is, she's saying, that I could not fully give myself to him. Who he warrants more than what I'm capable of giving. That kind of mentality is very sweet. I don't want to imply that the removal of doubt allows one to become arrogant with self-assertion. That would be the wrong idea. our Guru Maharaj, Srila Sridhar Maharaj, when he was 92, he would say, I am a student, and forever I shall remain a student. We're students of the infinite. He said, and the position of a student is the best. He said, not a finished professor knowing anything and everything. He cautioned against backing yourself into that corner, saying, but a student is a dynamic position. And what else, what other position could the finite be in relation to the infinite? Always something more possible to know, to understand, to feel, to taste, to appreciate. He said, so the position of the student is dynamic. He can make mistakes. His calculations can be off. He can have doubt. I used to say to people sometimes that, you know, if an atheist has a single doubt, then they're just a theist with a lot of doubts, you know, with extreme doubts. They can't have one doubt, but theists can have all kinds of doubts and still be a theist. Right? So it's legitimate to entertain these things. Right? So we ask questions. But so Guru Maharaj said, be in the position of a student, you can make mistakes, and you can be corrected. He said, it's a good position to be in. It's a dynamic one. It grows, increases. So forever, I am a student. And he meant, he wasn't just being clever, clever repartee, and no, he was speaking from his heart, and that was his approach to spiritual culture, the finite approaching the infinite, and whatever little fine faith we have, casting that toward the infinite, and if we are sincere, preparing yourself with what will come in response to that, something very wonderful, sweet, overwhelming, doubt dispelling, but then taking you into another realm of sweet doubt and wonder, wonderment, astonishment, adbhutakram, astonishingly wonderful movement, divine movement. And that realm where they say, katāganam natyagamanam, it'll all be expressed in song. All speech is song, all movement is dance. So if while singing and dancing, say, you know, I have a doubt. What is that? What is your doubt? They're singing, they're down, and singing an answer. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. Self-doubt on the basis of honest, candid self-analysis, which is called atma samiksha, self-scrutiny, is healthy. Remember our friend Socrates saying, the unexamined life is not one worth living. And if examining your life, you don't come up with some questions or doubts, look again, take another look. But that puts us in a position for grace, for mercy. It's a good thing. You know, if we're sincere, then we'll become, we'll be proper receptacles for mercy and grace, divine grace. Hare Krishna. Hari Haraya Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Hari Haraya Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha. Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan. Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan. Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Chandra. Garadhara Sivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Rupa Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath. Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath. Hey Chai Go Chai Kori Charana Bandhan. Jaha hoite vignanash abhishta puran. Hey chai go chai jar mui taroda. Tanta bara padare no mora panchagras. Tandara charana sevi bhakta saneva. Janome janome mor ehi abhilas. Echai gochai jabe braje koilovas. Radha Krishna Nitya Lila Korilo Prakash. Anande Bolo Hari Bhaja Vrindavan. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majai Aman. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pad Padma Koriya. Hari Nam Sankirtan Koe Narottamada. Hey Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama
Hare.
Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
Paramahansa Pariraja Gacharjan Sateras of the Sri Shimad, Shri Bhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad Shri Bhakti Rakak Sridhar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai. Bhagavan Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Jai Saparikar Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar Ju Ki Jai. Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Jai. Sri Rupa Anuga Guru Varga Ki Jai. Sri Swarup Ramananda Ki Jai. Nama Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda. Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasiddhi Gaur Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Navadip Dham Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Ki Jai. Sri Gupta Govardhan Ki Jai. Ganga Devi Jumuna Devi Bhakti Devi Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Om Vishnu Pad Vishva Varenya. Sri Lasi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Acharya Brinda Ki Jai. Seva Brinda Ki Jai. Srila Bhakti Ranjan Madhusudan Maharaj Ki Dai, Srila Bhakti Bhimabhadut Maharaj Ki Dai, Seva Vrinda Ki Dai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Dai, Nithai Go Premanande.